This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Miravis Neo, the next game-changing fungicide from Syngenta. The cold is bearing down on the Midwest. We've already seen the high for the day here in Northeast Iowa, and it's not above zero. But the grain markets don't care. They're more focused on the changing weather pattern in Brazil. And, oh yeah, those trade talks with China.
From the studios of Farm Journal, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we talk with Aaron Borer, a U.S. Meat Federation economist, Dr. Jason Lusk, the head of the Ag Economics Department at Purdue University, and top producers, executive women in Ag Trailblazer Award winner, April Hemmes. And later in this segment, Mike Opperman, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. I'm Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Man, that's a busy day, Davis. You sure we got time for all this?
Lots to fit in there. Lots to fit in. And
There's a lot to get in here.
Yeah, in other news, the lambing baby boom is set to begin. You sheep producers out there, and you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Tonight's going to be a big night.
Oh, my gosh, you are so right.
It's lambing season.
Yes, yes. Yeah, when I was growing up, my dad swore that we would never have sheep. And then I came home one day, and there was, I don't know, 40 or 50 ewes out on the scrub pasture.
Yep.
And, of course, when it came time for lambing, we had sows everywhere. We didn't have any room for ewes. We converted the garage to a lambing pen.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, that was crazy.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, they always want to drop those lambs the coldest night of the year, and I think we're here. Get your heat lamps ready. Make sure you got plenty of bulbs. You know, maybe get out your electric socks because you're going to be out there at 3 a.m. That's just the way it goes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've seen this before.
I think you got it right. I think you got it right. The lambing baby boom is underway starting about now. Man, I tell you, this weather, we are headed for some dangerously cold temperatures come tomorrow morning, dude.
Absolutely ridiculous, Chip.
Yeah. So, everybody, be safe out there. Yep. There's a lot of work that needs to be done outside, but it doesn't mean that you need to do it in a careless fashion. Just make sure that you're staying safe while you're out there and get things done and get your butt back in the house.
Yep.
And warm up. So lots going on in today's show like we talked about, but good grief, this conversation that I'm looking forward to all the conversations, but the convo with Jason Lusk, what is natural? That's what this conversation is going to be about.
Mm-hmm.
What is natural? So stay tuned for that. I'm looking forward to talking with Dr. Lusk about that. All right, what's in the news this morning?
Well, Chip, as we've discussed yesterday, the Chinese trade delegation is in Washington this week, setting the stage for trade negotiations. Sources report China may be planning to increase its purchases of U.S. farm and energy products in an effort to narrow the trade gap, but documentation of a potential negotiated settlement to the trade TIF has yet to be penned, and terms are uncertain. While both the U.S. and China acknowledge progress has been made, complicated issues do remain, Chip. Negotiators are likely planning to document a framework agreement this week, and Vice Premier Liu He has said he will meet with President Trump at the end of the two-day negotiations.
Yeah, I think that's good news. I think that's good news that President Trump is going to be meeting with Liu He.
Yeah. One concern among U.S. negotiators is the enforcement of agreements that may eventually emerge. Of concern for the U.S. are protecting technology and intellectual property. U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer has suggested tariffs may remain in place even after an agreement is reached until China shows clear signs of adhering to the accord. Now, this is a tricky one, Chip, because we can come up with all the agreements in the world, but somehow we've got to make sure that both parties follow what they said that they were going to do.
Yeah, it's the old Reagan line that comes into play here. Mm-hmm. You got to trust them, but you got to have a way to verify it as well.
Yep.
And those technology transfers, the forced technology transfers, that is becoming a bigger issue all the time. I mean, with the charges now against the Huawei officials.
Well, funny you'd bring that up because complicating matters, the U.S. Department of Justice unsealed indictments against China's Huawei, which is accused of evading Iranian sanctions and conspiring to steal U.S. trade secrets. Acting Attorney General Matthew Whitaker said the Justice Department was bringing nearly two dozen criminal charges against the Chinese telecom giant. U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross has pointed out the charges are, quote, totally separate from trade negotiations, although China's foreign ministry has urged the U.S. to stop its, quote, unreasonable suppression of Chinese companies and said the detention of a senior Huawei official is immoral, Chip.
Wow. You know, that's been the message all along, is that the Huawei issue is separate from the trade issue. And there's been other issues that they have said are separate from the trade. But I don't know how you separate them, Davis.
Right.
They're all, I mean, the tentacles from all of these stories and issues, they intertwine and there's no way to separate them, I don't think.
On the domestic front, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has invited President Trump to deliver the State of the Union address to a joint session of Congress on February 5. Sources say the president has accepted the invitation. USDA, meanwhile, is expected to release a schedule of upcoming report releases. A trove of data had been on hold during the partial government shutdown, and the agency will likely give guidance sometime this week as to when some of that data will be released. And quickly, finally, China's African swine fever may cut into import. Imports of U.S. soybeans and soybean meal in the coming year. The Wall Street Journal reported China has forecast an 11% drop in bean imports for the 12 months ending September. If the swine fever problem worsens and significantly more pigs have to be culled, soybean needs will wane further, putting more pressure on U.S. farmers, Chip.
Well, I'm glad to see that the Wall Street Journal caught up to a story that we've been talking about on AgriTalk for what?
It's about two and a half months. It's about time.
Yeah, for about 2.5 months. All right. Thank you, Davis. Appreciate it. Let's bring in Mike Opperman, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. Mike, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, Chip, and you?
Doing just dandy. I'm trying to stay warm, you?
Yeah. It's a concerted effort, that's for sure, these days.
No doubt. Hey, when we start talking about the outlook for the dairy markets in 2019, the one thing that I keep hearing is that it looks very similar to 2018.
Yeah, and then that's the case. You know, I was at the dairy forum in a much warmer Orlando last week and heard a lot of economists, and that was kind of the theme. Even though we're starting out 2019 in a fairly kind of bullish node, global supply has been relatively small or relatively short. EU is down. New Zealand is trucking right along, and we're at about 1%. And what's encouraging is we think 2018 about 8% up as far as global demand is speaking. So that certainly has some positive outlooks for 2019 prices. But what everybody is saying is that's just going to keep everything on par with last year and maybe expect prices to tick up towards the end of the year. But there isn't any short-term relief coming soon anyway.
Right. Well, if it's a repeat of 2018, I mean, we're going to be leaning on some of the safety net provisions in the Farm Bill then, aren't we?
Yeah, now that the government has reopened and they're trying to get the Farm Bill passed, there's a lot of dairy provisions in there, like dairy margin coverage, that people need to take advantage of. And what, you know, everybody says, like economists and whatnot say that, you know, producers have to have a risk management program in place. They got to protect the bottom side of their prices and give them some opportunity if the prices do start to come up, but certainly need to take advantage of some of those programs.
That's right. Yeah, Mike, I tell you, we got to hope for better times in 2019 than what we had
in
2018. Coming. That's the bottom.
They're coming, Chip. Trust me, they're coming.
Good. All right. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate that. Now I feel better all of a sudden. That's Mike Opperman. You too, buddy. That is Mike Opperman, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. Okay, when we come back, let's talk about some meat export issues with Aaron Burr. Today we're talking to Eric Tedford, Syngenta Fungicide Technical Manager, about Miravis Neo Fungicide from Syngenta. It's the latest fungicide innovation for leaf spot and soil-borne diseases. Eric, based on your trials, what can growers expect to see performance-wise from Miravis Neo?
Yeah, we've been conducting field trials with Miravis Neo for several years now for both disease control as well as plant health benefits. Those are the benefits from stress mitigation under low or no disease pressure. And we consistently see excellent results in control of diseases like frog eye leaf spot, which is the biggest yield nibbling disease of soybeans. And the long-lasting residual activity of Miravis Neo allows for lasting protection. For example, against frog eye leaf spot, we've seen disease severity as low as 18% 36 days after application of Miravis Neo. This is a 32% lower than the disease severity in the untreated check, and 6% lower than Pryaxor D. And in efficacy trials against Septoria brown spot soybeans, Miravis Neo typically provides the best results. In a trial in Missouri, Miravis Neo reduced brown spot severity from 73% in the untreated down to 6%. In a trial in Genevieve, Missouri, where frog eye leaf spot reached 83% in the untreated control plants, Miravis Neo kept the disease at check at 19%, which resulted in a 42 bushel per acre increase in yield. And also, in looking at plant health benefits, because of the plant health benefits that Miravis Neo delivers with two of the active ingredients providing stress mitigation, we've seen an average increase of 1.8 bushel per acre in yield in over the untreated check plots in trials where there's been very little to no disease pressure.
Wow, very cool. Miravis Neo keeping diseases like frog eye leaf spot under control. Thank you, Eric. That is Eric Tedford from Syngenta.
Growers face enough worries today. SDS and nematodes shouldn't be among them. Alevo seed treatment from BASF is the only product that offers effective protection against both SDS and nematodes throughout the critical growing period. Growers get amazing early season protection for stronger profit potential at harvest. So worry about weather. Don't worry about SDS or nematodes with Alevo. To find out more about Alevo and how to protect your soybeans, talk to your seed dealer or your BASF rep. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Current price times 1,000 acres, carry the one.
These days, it's hard to make the math work for your soybean fields. The BASF Liberty Link system with Liberty Herbicide makes it easier. Start with a 2-plus bushel per acre yield advantage. Add in lower system input costs and more complete weed control, and you get an extra $33 or more profit potential per acre compared to Asgrow Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Grow smart with Liberty Link and BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Commodity Classic is the place to chart your course to success.
We enjoy the seminars, the education part of the seminars, the networking, the equipment, the technology and the equipment, and just to make sure that we're on the right path and what else is new going on so we stay ahead of the game.
Join thousands of your fellow farmers at Commodity Classic, America's largest farmer-led, farmer-focused, educational, and agricultural experience, February 28th through March 2nd in Orlando. Discover more at commodityclassic.com.
It's time to give back to your roots and make this your best growing season with Radiate. Radiate's patented formulation of plant growth regulators help develop longer, stronger, healthier roots to improve nutrient uptake. And now, when you give back to your roots, you give back to FFA. Nutrient Ag Solutions and Radiate are proud to support national FFA alumni and supporters chapter grant programs across the country. Ask your Nutrient Ag Solutions crop consultant about Radiate or go online to RadiateRoots.com for more details. Always read and follow label directions. Check registration in your state.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
And welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm Chip Flory. I've got Davis Michelson with me.
Standing by.
Yeah, and I want to talk, Davis, you, African swine fever.
Yeah.
It's a big story. It's been a big story. Mm-hmm. You just mentioned that the Wall Street Journal is finally making note that if they do liquidate a large amount of the hog herd in China, that we could mm-hmm. be taking a bite out of the Chinese demand for soybeans, for protein, for animal feed. So
could be as much as 11%.
Yeah.
The release said 11% drop in soybean imports.
Yeah, or more.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue. It's an effort in China to get that disease under control. And it's not just a animal disease effort. It's an economic effort to get that disease under control. And we're going to talk now with Erin Borer. She is an economist with the U.S. Meat Export Federation. She joins us now. Erin, how are you?
Good morning.
Good morning to you. I'm So glad that you can make time to be with us today.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so Aaron, this U.S.-China Swine Symposium, what exactly is that? Was that?
Okay, yeah, so this is our seventh event, and we've done this for the past 7 years, roughly, with our partners at the U.S. Grain Council, U.S. Soybean Export Council, and also our Chinese collaborators, so their Animal Ag Association and Chamber of Commerce and Meat Association. And the goal has been, over these past several years, to bring U.S. and China swine industries together as, you know, basically the biggest producers in the world outside Europe, and to try to work together on common challenges and opportunities, if you will. And so clearly this year, the obvious choice for discussion was animal disease and specifically African swine fever.
Right, right. You know, Aaron, the swine symposium, is this where China, I shouldn't say got the idea, but were encouraged to westernize their hog production, to commercialize, bring it inside and out of the backyard production?
Well, I don't think we can take credit for that,
right.
But we have tried to discuss topics. I think last year the topic was manure management. So yes, it is. Okay. It is detailed and real, you know, producer issues, and it brings together academics in the field, but also those companies providing services and this type of thing to try to get knowledge actually into, you know, Chinese production. And of course, these collaborating associations have reach to their industry membership. So,
right.
So yes, we're trying to provide some of the expertise from our U.S. industry to our Chinese counterparts, and obviously helping your customers generally is a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. And the amazing thing here to me, Aaron, is when we talk about hog production in China, and we talk about the modernization of the farrowing house, modernization of the finishing house, but it doesn't change the fact that there are still a lot of hogs that are produced in backyards, right?
Right. Yes, definitely. And China, really starting in, say, 2015, they've had this kind of national effort to restructure their industry. And it's partially environmentally driven, you know, so moving hogs away from major urban areas and water sources. And so the government has had this restructure effort heavily underway, and that's part of why we saw China's spike, their last spike in imports back in 2016, which was not disease-driven. That was actually industry transformation-driven and following producer losses in the previous year. But what's very interesting is that this disease kind of, you know, tragic situation could really help China take up another gear on jumping to a more commercialized industry, which, you know, the track they've already been on, but accelerating it out of, you know, the need for survival, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the term accelerated, but really what we're talking about is forcing it here at this point, right?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, the disease is, I mean, it's scary, and I learned even more that day and hearing, especially from our U.S. speakers, so including Randy Spronk from Spronk Brothers, hearing how they have learned to operate, you know, following PED virus in the U.S. and how that totally changed the game on biosecurity on our U.S. operations, and hearing the, you know, the detailed, very meticulous steps that need to be taken every day by everyone involved, you can see where China's challenge is. And the disease moving through various vectors, you know, the human part, which is very important, and then the case in Europe where it's humans, but also wild boars, and boars being a factor to some extent in China as well. So yes, it's a huge challenge to tackle, and certainly does require professionalizing in a big way.
See, yeah, that's a great word for it right there. Aaron, and the reason that I say that is I've heard Randy talk about this before, and when he talks about biosecurity on his operation, he says, you know, we're doing things that almost come naturally to us to make sure that we don't have any disease issues in our finishing houses, firing houses. He said, but the things that come naturally to a U.S. producer have to be taught to those Chinese producers. That's yes. really the bottom line, isn't it?
Definitely. And as Randy put it, I mean, you have to have employee buy-in. They have yeah. to be, you know, a part of the team and dedicated. And yes, it became, I don't, much more clear to me after spending the day or two with Randy.
Yeah. 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 So, Aaron, when we talk about, the impact of ASF on the Chinese hog herd, of course, we're talking numbers. The last number that I had was just under 1 million head have been euthanized in an effort to control the spread of the disease. Is that an accurate number?
Well, out of what's been reported, yes. And it's, you know, of course, with China, talking hog production and numbers, it's always complicated and yeah. murky. But I think what became more clear to us in talking with kind of the industry analysts over in Beijing is that you have the disease-related direct depopulation, but you also have a lot of producers who are simply getting those hogs to market because they don't want the risk. And, you know, the subsidies for depopulating, if you have a finding, are not that high. So there's not like a good reward for saying, hey, I think I have the disease. And so there is incentive to get those hogs to market, depending on where you are, because the hog price varies dramatically right now because of transportation restrictions. But there's incentive to get those hogs to market before they get sick, or even at the first sign that they might be off a little bit.
Yep.
And so that's what's harder to really capture is the number of hogs that are going to market now that won't be there, you know, in the coming months. And so we heard that there are a lot of inventories, and especially in the north where you can just set that pork outside right now because it's cold enough. Yeah. And there's the backed up hogs issue where because you can't move pigs in a lot of cases, and obviously they were being transported long distances yeah. to be killed near the population for warm pork the next day. And so everything has been completely mixed up, but yeah. I think it became clear to me that there are big inventories that are going to have to be worked through before China really has a hole or needs to really start importing. Of course, Chinese New Year starts next week, and so the market has gone kind of quiet at the moment, and there was not a big increase in buying ahead of Chinese New Year. And so everyone will be watching to see what happens after the holidays. And I think our read is that the buying might not materialize for a while. So everyone's trying to guess when the hole is, and we certainly don't know, but it seems like there's product that needs to be worked through and still some hogs that need to be worked through before that shortage starts yeah. to show up. And then yeah. the magnitude, you know, it's anybody's guess.
Yep. But the bottom line here, Aaron, is that we're going to see a disruption on the supply side. And that hole is going to be our best opportunity to maybe slide in there and get some additional pork exports flowing into China, huh?
Certainly. And I mean, the biggest thing here is that we still have those retaliatory tariffs on U.S. pork.
Yes.
And so that 50% tariff, it makes it, I mean, China's hog prices could spike to 18 to 20 renminbi, and we'd be in the game even with tariffs. But it's a huge constraint for us at the moment.
Gotcha. Aaron, I sure appreciate you making the time for us this morning. Interesting stuff, and we'll stay in touch, okay?
Okay, sounds great. Thank you.
Thank you. That is Aaron Borer. She is an economist with the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Wow, interesting stuff. Coming up next, we've got Dr. Jason Lusk from Purdue University.
Growers face enough worries today. SDS and nematodes shouldn't be among them. Alevo seed treatment from BASF is the only product that offers effective protection against both SDS and nematodes throughout the critical growing period. Growers get amazing early season protection for stronger profit potential at harvest. So worry about weather. Don't worry about SDS or nematodes with Alevo. To find out more about Alevo and how to protect your soybeans, talk to your seed dealer or your BASF rep. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, this wheat market seems to be leading the grains to the downside today. What's going on?
Well, you know, we lost upside momentum yesterday, and here we are today, and it's kind of just technical sell-off. I don't think there's any real news behind the wheat market, to be honest with you. When we talk about the grain and soy markets in general, there's just concern, I think, or uncertainty with how the U.S. and China trade talks are going to go. There continues to be talk on both sides of that. But the indictments against the Hawaii Technology Corp out of China and its CEO obviously throws some uncertainty or more uncertainty into the situation and putting pressure on the markets this morning.
Yeah, Davis and I talked about that at the start of the show, Brian. They keep saying that there are two separate issues, but it's impossible to separate those issues, isn't it?
Well, you would think.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know where the trade talks will go, to be honest with you. But and the market doesn't either, and that's the biggest cause of pressure, I think, at this point in time. But it would be really hard, I think, to separate when you've got the Chinese government basically warning the U.S. and the U.S. continuing to press forward with this. It just does leave a cloud of uncertainty over the whole situation.
Sure does. Sure does. A lot of green on the screen in the livestock trade.
Well, it's very cold outside, and you know, typically when you get into those types of situations, it's not great for livestock, not great for livestock transportation, and I think that that's probably giving us a little bit of support in those markets. You know, the cash trade, whatever we'll see over the next couple of days here on cattle and hogs is probably irrelevant in terms of you know, what the overall impact from the weather is.
Find it now at ShopFarmJournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the best of tractor tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at ShopFarmJournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at ShopFarmJournal.com.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous one-month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Geez, I tell you what, we ran Brian out of time there, Davis.
Yeah, he grisafied on us.
Yeah, he did. The good news is, news is we've got Brian on this afternoon as guest analyst to talk about what's going on in the markets, so we can finish the conversation that we were trying to finish there.
Now we see he's all warmed up and ready for it. So that's something to look forward to.
Exactly. All right. Hey, let's bring in Dr. Jason Lusk. Jason is the head of the Agricultural Economics Department at Purdue University. Dr. Lusk, thank you so much for making time for us today.
Yeah, happy to be on.
You know, you do these consumer surveys, studies that every time I see the results come out, they leave me scratching my head. They leave me wondering, how do we use this information going forward? And you've done it again with this What is Natural survey, Dr. Lusk. What was the motivation to do this one?
Yeah, well, it's a policy motivation. Food, the FDA is considering whether to define the word natural on food packages. And if they're going to do that, it requires some information of, you know, some thinking about what it is that consumers imagine the word natural might mean. I should also say that this is predicated or being caused by a number of lawsuits that have been going on. The FDA allows food companies to use the word natural, even though they don't define it. As a result, there have been a number of lawsuits where people have sued food companies saying this, you know, your use of the word natural is misleading because of X, Y, and Z. So even some of the food companies have gone to the FDA and said, can you help us out here and give us a consistent definition so we can use the word but not get sued?
Right. Right. So when you asked consumers to define natural, did you find a common theme?
Well, there's a couple of ways to say this. One's more positive and one's a little more negative. The positive way to say it is there's a lot of nuance. maybe the more negative way to say it is a lot of inconsistencies. And so I think, you know, most of us kind of have probably a general sense of what we think natural means. But if you really start drilling down on it, what you find is that it's tough to pin it down. And so, for example, if you just ask consumers, we did a survey of over 1,000 U.S. food consumers, and one of the things we did is ask an open-ended question, what do you think the word natural means? And we tried to categorize, you know, people's just open-ended responses they gave us. And people frequently mentioned words like artificial and additive, you know, chemical, organic was mentioned a lot, processing came up some. So these are the words people use when they said it. And so, but then when you kind of drill down a little bit about, okay, what does it really mean for someone to say they think an additive or a preservative is not natural? Well, you know, something like salt or sugar can be a preservative. And if you ask specifically about those things, more people than not say those are natural.
Right.
Also, like canning, for example, more people than not say that could be natural. So it's not preservatives per se, but, you know, really maybe one way to say it is chemical sounding words. So, for example, if you say benzoates or, you know, nitrites or something like that, now a lot of people will say not natural.
Yeah, even though if we're talking about using salt and sugar as a preservative, you come back and use the chemical phrases and all of a sudden now it's not natural, right?
That's right. Another curious result there is we gave people, this was an online survey, even though it was nationally representative, we gave people some pictures of like food production processes and said, you know, which part of this picture do you find natural or not? And, you know, we traced everything from the commodity into the food processing plant with various processes from washing and chopping to fermentation to, you know, crystallization and the resulting foods. And we just say, click on this picture, the areas that you think are either natural and then again, not natural. And a curious result comes out of that, and that is that even though, you know, people find something like, let's say, like sugar or flour as more natural than not, they don't think some of the processes that are used to do that are natural. So, you know, for example, bleaching of flour or, you know, fermentation
that would require alcohol.
Yeah, exactly. And so this is a very curious conundrum that we think the end result is natural, but not so much about some of the processes that create those things.
So the end product that the consumer is buying, they might consider it natural, but they don't believe that it got there in a natural way.
Right. And I guess this kind of gets to that, you know, thing I mentioned about nuance or you know, complications, that this is not a straightforward thing. And one of the things we kind of find, too, is, you know, if you just kind of look at correlations between different, you know, we give whole lists of foods and processes and ask which are natural and which are not. And what we find by looking at those is that they're kind of different groups of foods and processes people find natural or not. And it kind of suggests this idea that natural is not just a single thing in our minds. It kind of, there are multiple dimensions to it. And so, like, certain foods or processes could be kind of natural in one way and not natural in another.
Interesting. My goodness gracious. If you're going to put the word natural on a package, you better be ready to defend it.
Well, I think, you know, that's one of the things, for example, that if the FDA does go forward and require or, you know, provide an explicit definition, you know, one of the things that they might think about is that this is a, you know, an area where it's ripe for confusion and misunderstanding. And so one of the things they may want to consider is that if you're going to use the word natural, maybe that should come along with a disclaimer, you know, in small fine print down at the bottom that defines what that word actually means according to the FDA.
Right.
Because, for example, one of the questions we ask on the survey is USDA regulates meat products. USDA defines natural on meat as essentially minimally processed. But when we ask our consumers in our survey what they think natural means on meat, they give us other answers like no hormones, no antibiotics, that kind of stuff.
Right.
So we can see even in meat, people are, even though it's allowed to be used and it's defined by USDA, doesn't mean people believe what, you know, you know, understand how it's actually defined. So I think that's sort of one key kind of policy conclusion, is that if the FDA is going to define it, it needs to go beyond just defining it. It needs to, you know, put it, the definition, you know, in front of consumers, right, where they can make an informed decision.
Right. So it's not just the end product being natural. It is the production process in which we get that animal to the meat case. But that brings in the whole production scheme when it comes to grains and oil seeds, fruits, mm-hmm, vegetables, and everything. And your study generated some fascinating results to me, Dr. Lusk, when we consider what is natural production out there.
Yeah, you know, the one honest assessment here is that if you ask consumers questions about really anything involved in commercial agricultural production, they don't think it's natural. So
right.
Maybe the most positive, you know, crop production, you know, method in terms of naturalness was organic. So if you ask, mm-hmm, you know, maybe 80% more people think organic is natural than would say it's not natural. But
right,
if you follow that up by say, you know, do you think these allowable pesticides in organic are you know, natural? Not, no, nobody considers natural. Then you ask about even crop breeding methods, like hybrid, you know, hybrid seeds, which are allowable under organic, allowable under convention, more people than not say hybrid seeds are not natural.
Unbelievable.
And so it's really, you know, it's when, if you get boiled down to, you know, production practices, it's really nothing that goes on a farm today, whether it's using pesticides, using, you know, even conventional crop breeding methods that, you know, the typical food consumer would say, I would consider that to be natural. So if you use that as a criteria, it's almost hard to imagine anything in a grocery store that could be,
yeah,
that could have the label.
Yeah. Here's one that really blew me away. When hydroponically grown crops, 23.2% said that is natural production. Am I reading that right? But hybrid seeds leans the other way to a negative 4.1%.
Yeah, so that 23 on the hydroponic, it means 23% more people said hydroponics,
yes,
were natural than people that said it wasn't natural. So you're right. You know, on average, people are saying they view the hydroponic as more natural than the hybrid seed.
My
job isn't necessarily to defend these answers. It's just to report them, and I think that's one of the challenging and frustrating things here is that you know, trying to make sense of consumers' knowledge and you know, understanding of these issues is really quite difficult. So, you know, I don't envy the position, say, the FDA is in, because they're being asked to define the word. But, you know, when you look at the kind of results like I generated here, it's really tough to do that in a way that doesn't, you know, run afoul of how consumers themselves define the word, because they're not always internally consistent. You know, yes, organic is natural, but lots of the practices used in organics are not. So, you know, so again, here's another example where the outcome could be perceived as natural, even though the things it takes to get to that outcome aren't.
Wow. I sit here and I think about the people that have really made an effort to be an advocate for production agriculture out there, and they're walking that tightrope. And really, you have, if you're going to be an advocate for agriculture out there right now, what you have to do, Dr. Lusk, is first understand that consumer's beliefs before you start trying to explain how you're, mm-hmm, how you're producing things. right?
Yeah, I think that's right, and that's sort of one of the things these results sort of help us understand is, you know, when we talk to consumers, they may not have internally, they may feel like, okay, I know what natural means to me, but when you kind of go a little further, you know, there's not always internal consistency. We did some focus groups too with people. We had groups of people that we asked these questions. It really is interesting just listening to people talk about struggle even internally with people seem pretty, you know, convinced they know what natural means, but when really pushed on it, have a hard time saying, okay, here's what it would mean practically in terms of a policy.
Yeah, so as soon as FDA puts out their definition of natural, then these consumers are going to have to make the decision, do I believe that? Is that where I stand? Dr. Lusk, thank you so much for making the time. This is fascinating stuff to me. I hope to talk with you again soon.
Sounds great.
All right, that is Dr. Jason Lusk, head of the Ag Economics Department at Purdue University. We've got...
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous one-month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
First-generation farmers are a special breed. Farm Journal business editor Annalisa Laca helps these ag unicorns tell their story on a new podcast, The First Years.
It may have been hard, but there's a lot of good things that came out of it. A lot of time we spent together and our kids, I think, were better for it.
Join me each week as I chat with first-generation farmers and ranchers who have what it takes, grit and determination, to start from nothing.
The First Years with Annalisa Laca is available where you access your favorite podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, and now the new AgriTalk app.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is The Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, The Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
We're live on the red carpet, waiting for the next generation Credenz soybean. There he is!
Oh, Ed, look! It's Credenz Liberty Link GT27!
I know, Edna. He's got elite genetics.
You gotta love his 4 bushel per acre yield advantage.
And he's both Liberty and glyphosate herbicide tolerant.
Definitely the year's hottest performer. Ask your Credenz retailer about the new Credenz Liberty Link GT27 soybeans.
Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
We're talking with Ron Jessen, product management and business development in the refined fuels marketing at CHS. Ron, what do we need to do to make sure that our diesel works the way that it's supposed to work in the winter?
When we look at cold weather blending, the first thing you want to do is you almost view that as if you were going to go on a trip. And what I mean by that is, first I decide where the destination is, and then we have to decide where are we at, and then you just build that path on how do I best get to my destination. When we look at destination, it really depends on the part of the country that you're in, but you want to take a look at blending that fuel to meet the demands of the coldest temperature that you would anticipate throughout the course of the winter. And as we're into that area, it's certainly getting cold in a lot of areas. We want to make sure that we're blending up that fuel, making sure we're taking care of the tank as well. That's one of the areas that we probably overlook quite often. We'll go out and buy this brand new piece of equipment, and unfortunately we forget that the quality of the diesel fuel that goes into that piece of equipment will really dictate how efficient that piece of equipment's going to be. We don't want to overlook that diesel fuel. Extremely important. We want to make sure that we've got that additized product that will meet the demands and give you a complete additive package from the storage tank all the way to the exhaust pipe.
So that's the winter. Things are going to change in the spring, right?
Yes, they will. As we look at spring, we start getting into a little more stress, a little bit more heat. We're pulling that equipment just a little bit harder. So again, there we really want to make sure that we're covering that whole system. What we're seeing here is historically we were really looking at combustion. That really was our largest problem. What we're seeing now is also the evolvement of the exhaust after treatment. Yep. And so we're looking at DPF. We start looking at adding the DEF fluids into it. And so by having that good, clean combustion will give you a much more efficient burn and will make that exhaust after treatment last much longer.
Man, who knew there was so much in diesel fuel? Thank you, Ron.
Thank you very much.
That's Ron Jessen from CHS.
Current price times 1,000 acres, carry the one.
These days, it's hard to make the math work for your soybean fields. The BASF Liberty Link system with Liberty Herbicide makes it easier. Start with a 2-plus bushel per acre yield advantage. Add in lower system input costs and more complete weed control, and you get an extra $33 or more profit potential per acre compared to Asgrow Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Grow smart with Liberty Link and BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Maximize your grain quality, yield, and profit this season with ProSaro Fungicide from Bayer.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm Chip Flory, got Davis Michelson here. Davis, are you ready for this?
I'm an all-natural newsman.
All-natural newsman. I have That's no right. idea what that means.
No, neither do I, but I'm going to say it.
I'm going to own it.
That's right.
I'm
going
to own it. Oh, man. Like, are you ready? Because you better hang on. We're about to open up the gates and right into this one, because this one could go a little fast paced on us. Are you ready?
Let's do it. Open
All
the
All right, let's bring her in, the winner of the first Top Producer Executive Women in Ag Trailblazer Award, April Hemmes. April, how are you?
Well, nice segue. I was like going, is there au naturel there? What is the segue here? You're an all natural kind of guy, Chip.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, we were just talking with Dr. Lusk from Purdue University about the study that he did on what consumers view as natural and what isn't natural in their food. And yes. it's very confusing, April. It's very confusing.
Well, isn't it crazy? Well, I think all these labels are confusing, and do not get me on that soapbox, let me tell you. But, you know, there's never been any more, pertinent time to take the time and talk to consumers. Tell them what we do out here on the farm, because there are so many of them are so far removed.
Right, right. That I had this conversation with my wife this morning, April, because I was talking to her about the conversation that I was going to have with Dr. Lusk. And she looked at me and she says, why is this surprising to you that people don't know what natural means when people are, have been removed from the farm for 2-3 generations?
So, well, and it's like sustainability. That's the key word. Yeah. Well, what is sustainability? It's like this unicorn out there everyone's searching for, but quite unattainable. You know?
Right.
So anyway.
Yeah. Interesting. Trailblazer Award. April.
Woo.
April, congratulations. You got to feel pretty good about that.
Thank you. None of us are out here farming to get awards, but you know, when you get recognized, it really doesn't hurt. And, you know, I just love it when my local coffee guys, you know, where we go tell lies about how much we got in yield. Congratulations. And then move on to the next thing. So it's like, wow, they actually acknowledged it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
that's big for farming guys and gals.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, it was it really was quite an honor, and so like the parameters were what we just talked about. You know, advocating for ag out there talking, and I just retweeted the tweet you retweeted, and you know, that's kind of a platform I've gravitated towards. Facebook, I do with the non-farming people and let them know kind of what I'm doing on the farm. And then part of it was innovations on the farm, business innovations, and then leadership. So
yes,
those were kind of the parameters.
Yeah. Hey, April, let's talk a little bit about your story here, because it is a unique story. You made that phone call back home to talk to Dad and to talk to Grandpa, and you were the girl coming home to the farm at a time when it wasn't all that normal for the girl to come home to the farm.
No, well, it still really isn't, but yeah. More, you know, are looking at it. No, in fact, when I went to Iowa State and got my animal science degree, there were only, like, I think 5% women in the ag college or even animal science back then. So it was unique. And when my senior advisor said, April, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I want to go home and farm. He goes, why would you waste your life like that? You know, and that makes people gasp now, but that was 1982, 81, 82. Things were not so great on the farm back then. So, you know, I did a series of jobs, but, you know, my heart was always on the farm. And it was my grandfather who said, she wants to come home and farm. She's coming home. So 34 years later, here I am. And I am unique because I'm owner-operator. You know, I'm the sole one out there. You know, I have part-time help. Like I say, I think I can say this on the radio. Since I'm a woman farmer, I have PMS, personal manservant. So I do it. And usually stuff is, so like I have an FFA kid. It's usually them doing their SAE project, supervised ag experience. So, you know, I give young people a chance to get out there on the farm, and always rocks to pick up the North Central Iowa farm.
Always rocks. So, yep. Hey, yeah. April, another thing that you've done is you've been a leader among the women in Northeast Iowa when it comes to taking ownership of the marketing side of the grain.
Right. Yeah. So I started, Calvin Leibold, who's a farm business management guy for Iowa Extension, Iowa State Extension. You know, I said, it was really quite, you know, I just wanted to get a better handle on marketing, because when I came home, I quickly learned I could work my rear off on the farm, but unless I marketed that crop right, I wasn't going to make money. Didn't matter how hard I worked. So, yeah, we meet. We've been doing it almost 8 years now. Yeah. You know, November to April, once a month, talking markets. And it's just amazing. I learned really early on when I was involved in some stuff, I don't mind going and talking to men or going to meetings with all guys. I'm very used to that. But some of these women who were managing their farms really had an issue with that. And I went, wow. You know, that's amazing. So, yeah, I've really tried to have a hand in bringing many things like that to these women who might not feel as comfortable as I do going to meetings with all guys. So,
excellent. Yeah. Excellent. April, I can't think of anybody more deserving. Congratulations.
Well, thank you, Chip. Yep, thanks a lot.
You bet. And, hey, the next time you come and see us, we've moved office in Cedar Falls. So don't go out to the industrial park. We're back downtown now, okay?
Oh, you're showing downtown what it's all about. Look at you.
April, it was good to talk with you. We will talk with you again soon.
Sounds good, Chip. Take care.
All right. That is April Hammond. She is the winner of the first Top Producer Executive Women of the Year, or Executive Women of Ag Trailblazer Award. Very deserving there, Davis.
Yeah. Yeah, she's great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got a feeling that we're going to hear from April again. There's spots on Wednesdays. What do we do on Wednesdays?
Let's see.
The Farmer Forum. It's a good spot to put April in the future, no doubt about it. Thanks for listening today, everybody. Thanks to Aaron Borer and to Jason Lusk for joining us today. Come back this afternoon. Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady is going to be my guest. And tomorrow morning on AgriTalk, we've got that Farmer Forum. Oh, and we're going to talk with Representative Henry Cuellar from Texas. That's tomorrow on AgriTalk.
The mighty Prosoro, king of fungicides. Its fast action and long residual make it the keeper of grain quality and yield. The hammer of head and leaf diseases. The number one reducer of scab. When your goal is greater wheat quality and higher yield, use Prosoro fungicide. And the crown of higher profit will be yours. Learn more at prosoro.us. Always read and follow label instructions.
Commodity Classic is the place to boost your bottom line.
We're all in business to make money, you know, and you want to succeed at your job. you come here, you're able to take this information and become more profitable from seed to fertilizer to equipment, everything.
Join thousands of your fellow farmers at Commodity Classic, America's largest farmer-led, farmer-focused, educational, and agricultural experience. February 28th through March 2nd in Orlando. Discover more at commodityclassic.com.
Thanks to Miravis Neo Fungicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer today about pre-ordering Miravis Neo or visit the Miravis Neo webpage.